Welcome to the Democracy Dispatch podcast. I'm Justin Marsh, political director at Vermont Conservation Voters. This is your weekly scoop on legislative action as we work to push forward environmental policies for Vermont. Each Monday, we will take a look back at the week prior, preview the week ahead, and speak with legislators and advocates on topics affecting our air, water, open spaces, and quality of life. On today's episode, I'm joined by Senator Kasha Rahm Hinsdale, Chair of the Senate Committee on Economic Development, Housing, and General Affairs, and Kristen Warner, Public Policy Manager at Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility. We will be discussing the roles of businesses in shaping policy and the apprehension some feel about getting political. To assist us in that conversation, we will be joined by Kate Ogden, the Advocacy and Movement Building Manager at Seventh Generation. Before that conversation, we take a deeper look at the Climate Superfund Act known as Make Big Oil Pay with Senator Tanya Vihovsky, a progressive representing the Chittenden Central District. And later, a breakdown look at the League of Conservation Voters National Scorecard to see how our federal delegation stacks up and their voting records on environmental policies in Washington, D.C. But first, I want to bring Lauren Hurl, Executive Director of Vermont Conservation Voters, into the fold for our Session Shakedown segment, where we recap the last week in the State House and give a preview of what is in store. Hello, Lauren. Crossover is officially behind us. You even got to escape the chaos of the State House for a bit last week and got to the White House down in D.C. Tell us about that trip.
Yeah, there was an opportunity to go down for something called a Communities in Action event where the White House was pulling together people with kind of different sectors talking about how federal investments were affecting communities. So things like the American Rescue Plan Act and Inflation Reduction Act, and trying to gather stories from people on how that's helping people and what further needs there are for communities.
Awesome. Sounds like a worthwhile adventure. Let's unpack what made progress this last week in Montpelier, though, starting with H-687, which includes changes to Act 250. Where did that end up?
Yeah, so the House Environment and Energy Committee moved that bill forward on an 8-3 vote. And so that will be, I'm sure, an ongoing, robust conversation. Lots of policies related to how, you know, kind of finding that balance of allowing more housing while simultaneously protecting our environment. So a lot of hard work that committee did. So great to see that moving forward. And I'm sure lots more discussion as it continues to move through the process.
And then we have H-706, which is a bill that would ban neonicotinoid pesticides from seeds. That made it through the Ways and Means Committee and will be approaching the floor. When might we see a floor vote on that?
That we would, so it's in the Appropriations Committee now, so hoping it will be on the floor as soon as this week. But they've got basically the money committees have to pass bills out by Friday of this week. So in that case, you know, it could get pushed off for another week or two, but hopefully we'll see action soon.
Okay, makes sense. What about S-213, which is the Flood Safety Act? When are we expecting that to get to the Senate floor?
Yeah, so the Senate Appropriations Committee moved that through on a really strong vote. So we anticipate action on the Senate floor this week. So that will be a really important one. So getting those calls in to senators to support the Flood Safety Act would be great.
Yeah, and exciting to see. We're going to finally be scoring some votes now, it sounds like.
Yes.
We have H-289, which includes updates to the Renewable Energy Standard. That was in Appropriations Committee last Friday. What happened there and what's next for that?
That bill moved out of the House Appropriations Committee on an 8-3-1 vote. So that also is heading to the House floor. So that bill is in good shape, you know, lots of good changes to ramping up our commitment to renewable energy. So hope to see a strong vote there.
And speaking of strong votes, you had the pleasure of chatting with Senator Tanya Vihovsky following the Senate Committee on Judiciary's vote on S-259, the Climate Superfund Act. Set up that conversation for us.
Yeah, this has been another priority, really looking at how we can hold oil companies accountable for the harms that their products are causing in Vermont. And so we heard from Senator Vyhovsky about the bill and what's next. So why don't we go listen to that conversation now? So I am delighted to be here today with Senator Tanya Vyhovsky, and I'm excited to hear about a bill that her committee, the Senate Judiciary Committee, which is one that we don't often spend a lot of time in, and so it's great to be able to talk about some of the work in there. And so, Senator, thank you so much for joining us today, and we want to talk about the Climate Superfund bill. So can you give folks just an overview of what does it do, why does it matter, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, absolutely. It is exciting to get to talk with you because I don't get to do it very frequently. So the Climate Superfund bill is really exciting. What it does is it asks, well, it doesn't ask, it demands that the companies who knew their product would do harm to the climate and continued to use that product and sell that product and extract that product anyways, be held responsible for paying for the damages that their product has caused. In this particular instance, we're talking about oil companies. We're talking about the damage that fossil fuels has done to our climate, damages we've seen really just in our face in this last year with the flooding in July, which is projected to cost the state of Vermont over $1 billion. And that cost burden right now goes to our taxpayers. It goes to individual homeowners. And so this bill sets up under a strict liability standard that for a covered period, which in the bill that passed out of the committee today is from 1995 until the end of 2024, that the damages incurred during that time that these companies have to pay for those damages, which should help Vermonters not have to bear the cost burden of what we anticipate is going to get worse, not better.
Yeah. And as someone who lives in Montpelier and have been, you know, just having so many conversations, it's just heartbreaking what people have been going through and knowing that the state could take action to actually hold accountable the companies.
What we're doing.
So it's great. And it's an exciting day to be talking because your committee took action on this today. And so tell us what happened and where it goes from here.
Yeah, absolutely. So through the course of testimony, the bill changed a little bit. The covered period actually expanded. The rulemaking provisions that are dictated to the Agency of Natural Resources got pushed out a little bit. What we heard from them is one, they're working on some climate resiliency plans right now that would probably play in with this, and they need some time to finish those. But also under the environmental justice law is that they need time to really engage the most impacted communities. So we did push out that rulemaking deadline a little bit, which shouldn't actually, it may not actually impact the implementation of the bill, because we do expect that it may take a while to navigate through potential litigation to actually get to the point where we're capturing that money to pay for the climate damage. So those are kind of the big changes that happened in the bill. The other thing that I liked that changed in the bill was we sort of expanded what those monies could be used for to make sure that homeowners were made whole and to make sure that we had adequate housing for people to move into. As someone who formerly worked with individuals experiencing homelessness, housing is really important to me. And I know we're just in this critical space. You know, at my other committee visited Barrie, and what we were hearing is that people are living in unsafe conditions because there's nowhere else for them to go. And so I wanted to make sure that this bill would help address the there's nowhere else for them to go. And then this morning, we actually voted the bill out on a vote of 5-0-0. So we got everybody in support. ANR is in support. So I'm really excited that we're moving forward with a unanimous vote out of Judiciary.
Yeah, that was really amazing work. It's so great to have that administration support, the treasurer, the attorney general, and then to get the bipartisan, tripartisan vote out of your committee is awesome. So, well, thank you so much for all of that effort. It's such a critical bill. And like you said, it's kind of the long-term vision for how we can help pay for the damage. And I know you all are also working really hard on immediate support and help for communities and for individuals. So thank you for all of that. So we will leave it there for today, but really grateful for your time and all your effort on this and so many important issues.
Yeah, thank you so much. And thank you for all of your work, because what I know as a former community organizer is we do our best work when we're sort of working in partnership both in the building and outside the building. So I also want to thank you for the work you've done to organize around this outside the building.
Well, it's a team effort and we're grateful for you. So have a great weekend. Thanks for your time. Yeah, take care.
You too.
And now it's time for our conversation about what happens when businesses get political. We will discuss the importance of, but also the apprehensions and complexities surrounding businesses who are engaged in political advocacy and elections, including the strategies environmental businesses headquartered in Vermont employ to effectively communicate their positions to policymakers and the public. To join me, I have Senator Keisha Ram Hinsdale, Chair of the Senate Committee on Economic Development, Housing, and General Affairs. Kristen Warner, Public Policy Manager at Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility. And Kate Ogden, the Advocacy and Movement Building Manager at Seventh Generation. Senator Keisha Ram Hinsdale is a Democrat from Shelburne, representing the Senate's Chittenden Southeast District. She's serving her second term in the Senate following four terms in the House, having first been elected in 2008. She has a perfect 100% environmental voting record. Kristen Warner is a native Vermonter and experienced lobbyist, having worked to champion reforms in early education and advance public policy in both public and private sector healthcare and childcare before joining VBSR. Kate Ogden leads the Seventh Generation's advocacy work through partnership with organizations at the forefront of the climate justice movement. Over the past 15 years, Kate has developed and implemented advocacy campaigns on climate justice, toxics regulation, deforestation, protecting our oceans, and protecting the right to protest. Thank you for joining me today for this conversation. I've been genuinely curious about this topic for over a decade, and I've never really had much more than some brief interactions about it. I think I discovered the hesitancy for businesses to get involved in both the endorsement and election process with candidates when I ran for Vermont House myself. I live in a small town, and it was seen sort of by some business owners as a risk that was too big to attach their name to any one candidate or a party versus the other. So I can see it being more divisive for presidential elections, and that might be more of a sign of the time, thinking about how I personally would feel spending money with a business that had Trump flags and signs all over it. But I want to start off by getting Senator Ram Hinsdale's thoughts on this as someone who has been an elected official for over a decade and you've run two statewide campaigns. What has your experience been with this hesitancy and what gets drummed up for businesses when you have to have this conversation with them?
Well, first of all, I just want to say I'm glad you're having this conversation, Justin, and folks at Vermont Conservation Voters. It is a really important one. And so often, economy and environment get pit against each other in such an unhelpful way. And the victim of that is generally the public, and particularly people in poverty, who want clean air to breathe, and they also need economic and personal sustainability to be able to thrive as well. I think sometimes it's nice to go back to the origin of these words, which are really similar. Oikos in Greek, which has given rise to the word economics or economy, means your household, like where you live, where you are, how you think about your immediate well-being. And environment is derived from the Greek word environeir, which means what's around you or surrounding you. So really, at the end of the day, they're very similar contexts for what we need as species, as humans, as mammals, as living beings to thrive and to do well and to know that our children are doing well also, which is what is going on around you and how what is your house in order. I think we're finally getting past the dichotomy dynamic and into understanding that supply chains are dependent on a climate that's stable. And for people to care about the climate crisis, they need to be not facing any personal economic crises so that they can fully participate. And so I think we're getting to a better place, but it's frustrating that it's taken us so long to have this conversation as a joint one.
And as chair of the Senate Committee on Economic Development, Housing, and General Affairs, you're inviting businesses and organizations to your table every day to offer testimony on legislation that really will affect their bottom lines and their work. So you know, later, many of these policies will get voted on by the General Assembly. And so is there a disconnect between work done in the building during session and the work to get the legislators actually elected in the first place?
Interesting. You know, some of us love both. That is rare. and they are different, but I think they're so interrelated if you actually care about representative democracy. You know, we should be listening to our constituents and getting out there, talking to them about their concerns so that we don't forget those when we get to Montpelier. I think the flooding is a great example. For at least 15% of the state, their lives are still completely upended. They are afraid when it rains. They don't have safe, healthy housing to live in. They don't know what the future of their business looks like. They don't know if they can find a new place to live in Vermont. We should be continuing to center those who've been impacted so heavily this past year. And so often, if we're not having continued conversations out in the community, we're able to sort of go back to our pet issues and forget those who are struggling the most. I try to make sure we don't do that. And when we invite young people in, or when we invite those most impacted, it usually, even if it's one or two stories, can really change the course of our legislation.
And do you ever see, do you ever get, you know, told no when you're inviting a business to your table, that they don't want to be advocates for any particular topic, or do you generally have an easy time finding that businesses are agreeable to speak with you?
It's Vermont, you know, I think they want to be, all businesses want to be seen as relatively socially responsible and environmentally responsible. So they do struggle, I think, if they have mixed feelings about particular issues. I have not gotten a single business organization who is publicly opposing our amendment to the Constitution to support unions and collective bargaining. This puts us on the other side of a right to work state that is doing union busting and diminishing the power of unions. But I have had no one from the business community go on record about how they feel related to the bill. And so as I try to do my due diligence, you know, I'm trying to get creative about how we make sure they feel heard, when at the same time, you know, it really is still up to them to use their voice if they want to in the process.
I want to bring in Kristen Warner of VBSR into the fold now. Kristen, as public policy manager, what role are you playing in bridging the gap between Montpelier and your member businesses?
Well, greetings to everyone. So the role that I play as public policy manager for a statewide business association of over 700 members, member businesses, is really to be the eyes and the ears in the State House. So I work directly with a public policy committee within VBSR who really engages the business membership around distilling a platform of priorities for each legislative session. And my role in the State House is to track progress on each of those pieces of legislation. But importantly, our members have a real expertise. They are industry leaders. They are community leaders. They are parents and family members themselves. And so I constantly seek out opportunities for business members to come to the building and speak on their expertise while pushing and nudging forward the policy platform that they've set as a priority. So I prefer not to be in the chair myself before a committee. I think it's most important to really just invite and provide the opportunities for our members to come in and speak for themselves. Because like anyone, whether we're talking about, you know, a constituent that's struggling with housing, we're talking about someone who's struggling with mental health, or any of the other issues that are before the legislature today, people with that lived experience are the strongest voices. And that's no different from business. And so a lot of the work that we do as an association is updating on progress for when people can't be there, and really finding opportunities outside of just providing testimony for our members to weigh in with their legislators. And so there's a number of different ways and tactics that can look, whether that's a business sign-on letter or coming into a business roundtable or coming to a press event or submitting an op-ed. Those are all additional ways that I seek to bring our member voices to create, help public narrative and help move our policy agenda forward.
And you organize a lobby day in the State House, Businesses for Climate Action, which most recently was held on February 1st. Describe that day to listeners and how you approached your members to take action and what that action looked like.
So this is a day that matters to our members. We're an organization that believes that business can be a force for good, but that prosperity should not be at the expense of people and our planet. And so bringing people together, particularly on the heels of a climate disaster that we saw with the July flooding that just had a significant impact on our business community, it was a really easy lift for people to come. Although, you know, it's asking people, anybody who comes to a lobby day to generally take a day off from work to come and meet with legislators. But we had around 70 business leaders who did come to Montpelier to really advocate for, you know, three essential climate priorities in the Make Big Oil Pay and the Climate Superfund, renewable energy standard modernization, and we're working very hard to pass flood recovery resources for businesses. And so our members came, spoke on those three issues before the media, but even more importantly, had small group meetings. Senator Ron Hinsdale was a part of those meetings where our members got to speak and tell their story about why those issues were important and ask for their support.
And one of those members is with us today. We have Kate Ogden from Seventh Generation who took part in the lobby day. Kate, Seventh Generation is a global brand headquartered here in Vermont. How do you see Seventh Generation's role in state and local policy? And does that extend across our borders?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thanks for having me on. I think that at Seventh Generation, we understand that for better or worse, and I think historically often for worse, the business community has a huge amount of influence in how public policy gets made. And we are an organization that has very strong core values around the importance of being really mindful of the impact that our business has on people and on the planet, and working for the type of systemic change that will create the type of world that we all want to live in. And so for us, that means at the local level, we've been engaged for a long time, in particularly around climate issues in Vermont and in other states and at the federal level. I think because we're based here, many of our staff live in Vermont. This is our, not just the home of our business, but it's the home of many of the people who make up the company of Seventh Generation. And so it's important to folks personally to show up, but it's also just a core value of our business. We have influence, and we think it's important that we leverage that influence in a way that is working toward the type of systemic changes that we know we want to see. And then we also, where we can, we work to engage our consumers in that work with us. And so we want to make sure folks that are following Seventh Generation or buying Seventh Generation products also have an opportunity to learn about the issues that we care about and can take action on them with us.
Yeah, and Seventh Generation has been such an important voice with proposed legislation just this year to ban PFAS and forever chemicals from consumer goods such as menstrual products and cosmetics. And we've been part of press conferences before with your organization to call for that banning. How do you determine as an organization, or maybe even just within your role, which policies you decide to take action on advocating for?
That's such a good question, especially because I think it's incredibly important to me that more businesses take this step into advocacy. And I think one of the questions or the concerns that I hear a lot is, well, if we start speaking up on this issue, does that mean that we'll have to speak up and be heavily engaged in every single issue as it comes up? And what I would always tell folks who are thinking about how to take this step as business leaders is to really understand, what are the core values of your company? What are the issues that you care most about? Where do you have authenticity? Where do you have expertise? And so obviously, Seventh Generation has a long history of expertise in working for safer chemicals, in working for safer products, in thinking about how we make our products as sustainable as possible. And we have, you know, really stepped into the space and understanding how the business community can be stronger advocates for climate justice. So all of those, you know, the issues that we stand up and really raise our voice on are issues that we have some background and some understanding and knowledge of that we can specifically leverage on that issue.
Kristen, it's so great that you've been able to connect us with a well-known business doing incredible work for sustainability and our environment. But I think we can agree that Seventh Generation sort of represents that larger business in the state. It's also a B Corp, which is a rather unique characteristic. Hoping you can go into a little bit what a B Corp is, and then also what differences come up for some of the smaller, more traditionally modeled members of yours. Are there greater risks for them to get involved politically?
So I would love for Kate to speak to what it means to be a B Corp member representing one here on this call. But, you know, you really touched on something important, is that, you know, we don't want to come here today or in our everyday work and make it appear that for businesses to have advocacy in their communities and on a state level or a federal level, that they have to have, you know, sort of the revenue and the sales and the staff that Seventh Generation has. We experience every single day brick and mortar businesses stepping forward and using those values, because I agree so much with Kate about saying you have to be really clear as a person and a business leader and an owner what you believe in. And from that point, decisions get made really easily on what to support and what not to support. You know, we see small businesses take steps forward every day on advocating for issues that they care about. And it often looks similar. I mean, we will submit letters to the State House that have Seventh Generation on it, and then a small catering company from rural Vermont. And so both of those, so our tactics are often shared with the small and the big businesses alone. So I don't think that it is something inherently, that it's a inherent requirement that you have a staff who are there lifting up that work. And that's not been our experience at all, but that's a requirement.
Got it. And yeah, Kate, did you want to answer that question about what is involved with being a B Corp?
Yeah, I mean, the B Corp movement really is sort of about this idea of that, you know, Kristen spoke to earlier. I think it's a shared value across the B Corp community and Vermont businesses for social responsibility, which is that we need to move from the idea of sort of a shareholder economy to a stakeholder economy, and really understanding how do you have a business that holds in balance the impact on people and the planet and your bottom line as a business. Vermont was a founding B Corp, so we've been a B Corporation since 2007. And it's a community that I have found to be a really valuable peer network around many of the issues that I think any business that understands or aspires to leveraging business as a force for good, it's a great community and peer network to engage with folks to understand how best to do that.
And obviously, we've just grazed the topic today. There's so much more that we could discuss, but I want to close by thanking you all for your work and the role that you've played in advocacy, and see if there's any final thoughts or additional comments that either of you have to make that we didn't get around to.
I think looking at the challenges that we face on a warming planet, it is the responsibility of students and residents and business owners alike to take action, to start working towards solutions, and to do so urgently. And I'm proud of businesses like 7Gen and like the small mom and pop businesses that are really working together to drive towards solutions.
Thanks, Kristen. I think what I would add to that is, as Kristen's saying, I think in the reality that we're living in 2024, the crisis that we are all facing, that we're facing as a state, that we're facing as a country and as a global community, it's just not enough anymore for a business to have a CSR strategy or a sustainability strategy. It's not enough to be looking only internally. I think that's table stakes at this point. Every business needs to be working to mitigate the direct impact that it's having on people and the planet. But it's time for businesses to start moving beyond that and really understanding, how do you leverage the influence that you have? Because the problems that we're facing are systemic. And businesses have a role to play in driving systemic change, the change that we want to see for the world that we all want to be living in.
Hear, hear. Wow. Thank you. What a great way to end this conversation. I want to thank you all for joining me today. And
thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thanks.
That was Senator Keisha Ram Hinsdale, Chair of the Senate Committee on Economic Development, Housing, and General Affairs, Kristen Warner, Public Policy Manager at Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility, and Kate Ogden, the Advocacy and Movement Building Manager at 7th Generation. Before we wrap up, I want to share results of the League of Conservation Voters 2023 Environmental Scorecard. Since 1970, LCV's scorecard has been the primary yardstick for evaluating the environmental records of members of Congress. It is available to download at scorecard.lcv.org. The 2023 scorecard shows how Vermont's delegation fought back against attacks on our democracy and environmental protections unleashed by a chaotic Republican-led House. In the House alone, there were hundreds of dangerous votes to cater to big polluters and the most extreme wing of the Republican Party. Vermonters should be proud to have leaders who stand up against big polluters and attacks on our environment. Our scorecard shows that Senator Sanders, Senator Welch, and Representative Ballant are working every day to protect our air and water and build a clean energy future. The full Vermont federal delegation scores for 2023 are Senator Bernie Sanders with 94% and a 91% lifetime score, Senator Peter Welch with a 100% and a 95% lifetime score, and Representative Becca Ballant with a 97% as her first year in Congress, giving her a 97% for the lifetime. A full narrative and all recorded votes can be accessed in full at scorecard.lcv.org. I want to thank our guests, Senator Keisha Ram Hinsdale, Kristen Warner, Kate Ogden, Senator Tanya Bihovsky, and of course, Lauren Hurl for assisting me. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe and give us a rating wherever you listen to your podcasts, and be sure to follow us on social media. You can subscribe to our emails, see our legislative environmental scorecard, and learn more about our work and policies by visiting VermontConservationVoters.org. We'll be back next Monday with another new episode, and until then, thanks for listening.